to be here with you, and we're going to have a great time together. And so as we get started, I would like to begin by asking you a question. The question I'd like to ask you, if you were given the choice to choose between something ordinary or something remarkable, which would you choose? For example, would you choose an ordinary meal or a remarkable meal? Would you happen to choose an ordinary marriage or a remarkable one? Would you choose an ordinary job or a remarkable one? Or my favorite of all time, would you prefer to work for an ordinary company or a remarkable one? Oh. I'm a Mac guy. Come on. If given the choice, which would you choose? Would you choose ordinary or remarkable? Now, in one sense, it seems like a simple question with an obvious answer, but it's not. In fact, if you open up your packet of information, you'll see this is going to be your first blank, because this is the first problem. Because the reality is that every single day, you and I are asked this question, and we answer it, unfortunately, with the answer we probably don't want to admit. And that is, every day, you and I choose ordinary. We just spell it S-A-M-E, the same. Right? Think about it. In the morning, you get up around the same time. You engage in the same morning routines. You wear the same kinds of clothes. You do your hair the same way. You eat the same kind of breakfast foods. Then you go down and have the same kind of coffee, which you stir the same number of times in the same direction. You then get in the same car, which you drive on the same path to get to the same place of employment, where you do the same kind of work with the same kind of people, where you have the same kinds of conversations. So around the same time, you can go to lunch. So you can go to the same kind of restaurant where you can have the same kind of food. So you have the same kind of information and discussion. So that you can go back to the same job where you can do more of the same kind of work in the same way. So you can leave around the same time each day, so you can get in the same car, you can drive the same way home, so that after you get home, you can meet with the same family, have the same conversations, same routines, eat the same kinds of foods, watch the same kind of television programs, go to bed around the same time, so you can get up the next day and do the same thing all over again. If you think about it, that's the way most of us live. And that brings us into problem number two. And the second problem is this, that the natural drift of life is always from remarkable to ordinary to death. And what I mean by death is it no longer breathes life for us, right? It no longer sustains us. Let's take something as simple as a meal. Let's say you go out to a restaurant. You have a remarkable meal. You think, this is incredible. The next time you have to go out, you think, hey, where are we going to go? Oh, we've got to go back to that restaurant. I've got to have that, whatever that thing was. Now you go back, but this time you expect it to be remarkable. So even if it's cooked exactly the same way, it's not quite as remarkable as it was the first time. And then the next time you go back, if you order the same thing, it's not quite as remarkable, and eventually it becomes pretty ordinary. And if you keep ordering it, eventually you're going to say, why did I ever like that in the first place? Same thing happens in relationships. You meet somebody, you fall in love, it's remarkable. Woohoo! It's great! You know, and then you have the same kind of dates, and you do the same kinds of things, and over time it becomes pretty ordinary, and eventually it no longer breathes life. I've walked around this building and I've seen a lot of meetings. And my guess is, if you're honest, most of the meetings that you have are held the same way. It's the same kind of meeting. It's just a different week or a different time. And whenever you have anything the same way over and over again, it always moves from remarkable to ordinary to death, always. This is always true. Now, this is incredibly important for us as business people, because you can see in this graph here, we interact with our customers in one of four ways: through products, services, relationships, and the overall experience they have with us. Now, some of you have internal customers, some of you have external customers. It doesn't make any difference. You can either meet people's expectations, exceed them, or not meet them. It's all irrelevant, because even if the product or the service or the relationship or experience is remarkable, it always goes from right to left. Eventually, what was once remarkable will no longer be remarkable. This summer, I went down to Orlando for a conference, and I brought my kids along. They're teenagers now. And one of the reasons I brought them along, because I thought they'd love to go to Disney. So when we got down there, I said to my girls, I said, well, would you guys like to go to Disney? And they both said, nah, been there, done that. Think about that. Most people think of Disney, remarkable. But over time, everything moves from remarkable to ordinary to death. Everything. Now, if you're not depressed, hopefully I will depress you soon. All right. Problem number three. The third problem is that most organizations and departments never ask the question, is what we're doing remarkable? I mean, think about that. When was the last time you were sitting in a meeting here at work or any other place where someone said, is what we're doing remarkable? It rarely ever happens, and the consequences are significant. For example, let's take a company that hasn't been remarkable for a long time, Burger King. Now, Burger King has had a problem. It doesn't matter who the management happens to be. It doesn't matter what the ad agency is. They have never been able to be remarkable. They keep losing money quarter after quarter. How they exist, I don't know, but they keep losing money. Now, it's not like they don't know the answer. In fact, one of my favorite quotes from years ago was a guy named Barry Gibbons, who used to be the CEO between 89 and 94. And this is what he said: when we did it right, it was still pretty ordinary. Now, think about that moment of honesty. When we did it right, it was still pretty ordinary. Think through the work that you do. Think through the systems. If the people who work for you did the work that it was laid out, if they followed the system perfectly, would the end result be remarkable or ordinary? It's a great question. Very few people ask it. Now, Burger King hasn't been remarkable for a long time. How about a company that has been? Let's take Sony. I remember when I was in high school, some of you may remember when the first Walkman came out. I remember getting one. Now, my parents used to give me a hard time because I like to listen to music late at night. And they always, turn the music down. And I remember getting that Sony Walkman the first time and putting it on. I can remember what I listened to, Gino Vannelli, laying in bed, music blasting, but my parents didn't hear it. I thought this was the coolest thing. I went and told all of my friends. That's what remarkability is all about. You've got to get one of these. Okay, so Sony's been remarkable for a long time, but now they're not. In fact, last year is the first year they ever had a losing year, ever. When 60 Minutes interviewed their CEO, Howard Stringer, this is what Howard Stringer said. We got complacent. We got complacent. In fact, today, I just happened to be reading in Fortune magazine, an article called The Big Game. And Sony, which missed its promotion for the PlayStation 3 by 6 months now, okay, is even in worse trouble. And in fact, their quarterly profits now have plummeted 94%. Sony, once remarkable, now not. Why? Because they stopped asking the question, is what we're doing remarkable? And you lose big time. Now, that's problem number three. There's a fourth problem. And the fourth problem is that real growth is driven by innovation, not cost or expense reduction. And I brought this up because Jim and I have talked about this on a number of occasions. This week, Business Week, why bankers keep seeing bears. Outlook for banking, really bad. Really bad for the next year. Now, the tendency for most companies when something like this happens is they almost always go to cost or expense reduction. But that hinders the ability to be remarkable, correct? Now, some of you may not want to trust me. I'm a little bit younger, so let's go to someone like Warren Bennis. Warren Bennis says, you cannot restructure or re-engineer your company into prosperity. Rather, it takes ideas. Now, let me explain this philosophically. It's pretty easy to get. Reduction, by definition, is simply continuing to what we've been doing just at a cheaper price point, right? But whenever we continue to do anything we've done before, we're always on the path toward ordinary and death. You can't innovate by reducing. So, bad news. If something doesn't change, everything moves from remarkable to ordinary to death. The good news is it doesn't have to be that way. All you have to do is choose to make everything you're doing remarkable. And the great thing about a choice, by the way, is that a choice happens like this. You don't have to wait until someone gives you permission to make a choice. You don't have to wait until this evening. You don't have to wait until tomorrow. You don't have to wait until somebody from New York says, hey, you can do this and make it more remarkable, right? In a moment, you can choose and say, from now on, I no longer want to put up with doing the same thing the way that I've always done it. I'm not going to put up with ordinary, because ordinary is a killer. Sameness is your enemy, and boredom is your foe. Just say, no more. I'm not going to tolerate any longer. From this point forward, I want to make everything more remarkable. I want my marriage to be more remarkable if you're married. I want my family to be more remarkable. I want my work to be more remarkable. I want my service to be more remarkable. I want my customer service to be more remarkable. You can make that choice, and by making the choice, everything changes. In fact, Seth Godin puts it this way. He says, the first step toward becoming extraordinary is, of course, to stop being ordinary. It's a simple choice. Now, I started this company called Make It Remarkable. I began with an assumption, and my assumption was this. I believe that all of us here want to be and do remarkable. I think we're hardwired for remarkability. I really do. The problem for many of us is that we just don't know how. Because there's no process at the top of our minds to help us understand how to do that. And so the first thing that I did is I said, I need to come up with a process that anyone can use at any time with anything and make anything they're working on remarkable. And you're going to find out that process today. And when I say anything, I mean anything. If you go home tonight and you want to make a more remarkable meal, use these 5 steps, it will work. If you want to make a more remarkable vacation, it'll work. If you want to make a more remarkable customer service program, it'll work. If you want to make a more remarkable human resources manual, it will work. This process will work with anything at any time. You just need to know the process and then work the process, which you're going to get to in a moment, but first we need to define something. Let's define what we mean by remarkable. Remarkability is doing this. It's doing something in such a way that the recipient is moved to positively remark to others about that experience. It means it's an action. It's something that you and I do, The recipient receives that action, and then they're moved. In other words, they're inspired inside. Not because we tell them to tell somebody else, but because they choose to tell someone else about the experience they had with us. Right? And that's what all of us want in our companies. It's what we want with our teams. Yesterday, I went and bought a ticket to go to see Cirque du Soleil. Now, why did I buy the ticket? Because a year and a half ago, I read a blog post by Tom Peters, who went on and on about how incredible Cirque du Soleil is. Now, some of you may have known about it. I didn't know about it before. It's the first time I ever heard about it. I'm hooked on it, and so I'm going to go. Now, Cirque du Soleil didn't have to market to me. Tom Peters just remarked about something. I said, I want to participate in that. And that's one of the reasons why I like to say that remarkable is always marketable, right? Because when one of your clients, someone goes to one of your retail banks, and they go tell a friend about it. You didn't have to market to that person, right? That means marketing costs go down, but now you've got a new client or customer. That person now increases your market share, and because they give you money, without you having to spend as much to market to them, that increases your profit. It wins all around. Remarkable is always marketable. And it's not just for the company, by the way. It's for you individually as an employee. Right? Every employee who's remarkable has incredible job security. I mean, as a manager, how many of you want to get rid of your remarkable employees? Not a taker. There are probably people that you probably want to get rid of, but not the remarkable ones. So it's great for the company, and it's great for you as an individual. Remarkable is always marketable. Now that's good news. Here's the better news. The better news is this. Every day, somebody somewhere is doing something remarkable. Why not let that somebody be you? So if you like to make everything in your life more remarkable, then I want to encourage you to apply these three simple principles. Here's the first key. First key is you want to believe that you can create remarkable. You got to believe you can create remarkable. Now we need to start here because of something that Henry Ford said years ago. What Henry said is whether you believe you can or you can't, you're right. So if you're in the position where you believe you can't create remarkable things, if you believe that you're not creative, then you can't. Not because you can't, right? But because you tell yourself you can't. But you could just as easily tell yourself you can. It all comes down to what you believe to be true about you. And here's where I realize we have a problem. And here's the problem. That the studies tell us very clearly that the vast majority of adults do not believe that they're creative. They don't. But you once did. And all of us know that. Right? Everyone here has probably watched a three-year-old. Every three-year-old is incredibly creative, aren't they? If you've ever given a three-year-old a gift in a box, right? What do they play with? The gift or the box? Box. It's universal. Why? Because a toy, it looks like you know what you're supposed to do with it. But a box, that could be anything a little three-year-old wants it to be. It could be a boat. It could be a ship. It could be a classroom. It could be a church. It could be a tent. It could be a spaceship. It could be anything they want it to be. Because every single three-year-old is incredibly creative. And you were one of those three-year-olds at one time. But the studies also tell us that by the time most people reach the age of 8, or clearly by the time they reach 10, they no longer believe they're remarkable or creative. Now, if you and I see this pattern and it's almost universal, then we ought to ask the question why. And so let's ask the question, what is it that happens between the ages of 3 and 8? Answer? School happens. Exactly. School happens. Now, this is not anti-education. Both my parents are educators. I'm an educator, so I'm not anti-education. But here's what happens. When you were 3 years old, you believed you were a genius. Every idea you had was remarkable. And then you went to school. And you got to school, you got a piece of paper. It said, here, write this in the blanks. You know, you put your genius down on a piece of paper. And what happened? The teacher didn't think it was so genius, did they? All of a sudden, you got things wrong. And you quickly began to realize that no longer were all the right answers inside of you. The right answers were in the front of the room in the teacher. And if you wanted to succeed, you needed to stop coming up with your own ideas. You had to figure out what their ideas were and regurgitate them on a piece of paper. And that is why the vast majority of us, by the time we reached age 8, no longer believe we're creative. We no longer believe we're geniuses. Now, the reality is that you are. You just stop believing. Now, that's good news. And the reason it's good news is because you and I are always in complete control of all our thoughts. Always. All the time. Now, people always challenge me on this, and so I say, let me give you a simple illustration. Let's say you're at home with a significant other, and you're having a discussion. Back and forth, back and forth. All of a sudden, you hear this sound. Bring. What do you do? Hello. Isn't it true? All the time. Now, if I had asked you a moment before that phone rang, are you in complete control of your thoughts? You'd say, no way, they're making me angry. Because you gave up control. You gave up control. The reality is that you always have control. No one can make you angry. Okay, and no one can take away from you the belief that you're creative unless you let them. And so I want to challenge you today to no longer let the teacher or a parent or a boss or a neighbor or a relative or somebody who told you you're not creative to take it away from you any longer. All you have to do is just choose to believe you're creative. Just believe. You know, my wife and I, when we first got married, she did not believe she was creative. And I keep telling her, you're creative. And she'd say, no, I'm not. I says, yes, you are. And she said, no, I'm not. And so what I did is I started pointing out all the things that she did creatively. She loves design work, and she does great work in painting and other stuff, and doing work for the kids and their crafts. And I said, that's creative. Well, that's not real creative. And I said, that is creative. And if you were to talk to my wife now, she'd say, you know what, I am incredibly creative. Because she had been told for so long that she wasn't. It just took a period of time until she began to believe that she is. And the same is true for some of you. Because the moment you begin to believe you can create is the moment you can become more remarkable. If you don't believe it, you won't. So do you believe you're creative? I hope so. That's number one. Now once you get that, then we get to go on to the hard stuff. And that's that you need to work the make it remarkable process. You want to work the make it remarkable process. Now I think there are a couple things you're going to like about the make it remarkable process. The first is that it's simple. And most of us like simple. They're just 5 steps. That's it. And for those of you who are leaders and managers here, and I believe all of you are managers, right? You're going to have a team of people that you have to help them become more innovative and creative. So you want a simple process that you can easily explain to any of them, they can get it. So you're going to like that about it. It's very simple. The second thing you're going to like about it is it's scalable. And what I mean by that is that you can expand it and contract it at will. So if you only have 5 minutes tonight to figure out how to make a more remarkable dinner, you can do that. If you happen to have the next 3 months to figure out a new client first initiative, you can do that. It's still the same 5 steps, by the way. I'm a consultant. This is what I do with companies on big projects. They're the same 5 steps. Doesn't make any difference. You can expand it, contract it at will. You just need to know what the 5 steps are. You need to have a process and a language for your people. And the third thing I think you're going to like about it is that it's easy to remember. And the reason it's easy to remember is because, as Phil mentioned, I used to pastor a large church. And one of my observations, the profound grasp of the obvious, is that if I say something but people can't remember it, they won't use it. Thank you for that profound grasp. Okay, now, so what I did is I said, let's take an action and let's link a person so that when you link the action and the person, you will remember not only the step, but hopefully you'll remember what you're supposed to do in it. And you'll see how this all comes together. So let's take a look at the first step. There are 5 steps. The first step is this. You want to ask questions like Picasso. You want to ask questions like Picasso. So the first question you might ask is, well, what is the Picasso question? Good question. Here's the answer. How can I do this differently? That's the key question. Or if you're with a team, how can we do this differently? Now, this is one of the reasons why I love the Make It Remarkable process, because the very first step is to ask the question, how can I do this differently? Which means, by definition, we will automatically avoid the disease of sameness. Right? If you're going to have a meeting and your first question is, how am I going to do this differently, you cannot have the same staff meeting this week that you had last week, because the first question automatically forces you to do something different. And you're going to like this about this. Now, the reason why I picked Picasso to tie in with this first step is because he perfectly represents this. And let me demonstrate this. If you were to take a look at Picasso's painting from 1895, it is a very ordinary painting. If you looked at other painters of the time, it looks just like this. I mean, it's not bad, but it's not remarkable. But in 1907, something happened. In 1907, Picasso became famous because of this painting. Very different. No one had ever done anything like this before. He began to ask a question. Why can't I paint a 3-dimensional object on 2 dimensions? Why can't I paint the back of the head, the side of the head, and the front of the head at the same time? Why can't I mix body parts in different places? Why can't I mix animal parts and human parts together? And because he asked, how can I do something differently, he became famous. But guess what? This is 1907. I just picked a sampling here. How about this from 1910? How about this one from 1925? How about this image from 1931? How about this image from 1951? What do you note about all these images? None of them are the same. In other words, Picasso didn't just come up with something remarkable and say, now I figured it out, I'm going to keep doing it for the rest of my life and make as much money as I can. Right? Picasso did something different, and then he kept doing something different, and doing something different, and doing something different. And by the way, this is why my favorite quote from Picasso goes like this. To copy others is necessary. To copy oneself is pathetic. To copy others is necessary, meaning when you're learning, one of the first things you want to do is you copy the grandmasters if you're a painter, and you understand how they do their brushstrokes and how they see things and how they work with color and light. But when you go to create your own thing, don't ever keep copying what you've done in the past. To copy oneself is pathetic. And so the first thing you want to do is you want to ask the Picasso question, how am I going to do this differently? So when you go home tonight, if you want to have a more remarkable meal, you're going to ask, how can I do this differently? If you want to have a more remarkable meeting, how can I do this differently? If you want a more remarkable customer service plan, how am I going to do this differently? It's the key question. Now, in there, your notes, I said one of the things you can do is just pepper your problems with questions. What can I add to this? And I gave you a number of them in there. What can I subtract from this? What can I link from this, etc.? But one of the key things that you can use, and I notice a lot of people get stuck at this step, so I'm going to give you a real simple illustration, is to come up with constructs that will force you to think different thoughts. So let's take something very, very ordinary. Let's take something called mac and cheese. Okay, take the component parts of something and make them more remarkable. You got a pasta, you got cheese, you got a liquid, you got other, right? You got elbow, macaroni, orange dust, which really isn't cheese. Right? You add milk and butter, and if you ask most people what mac and cheese is, this is what they would come up with. And so you'd say, hey, create a more remarkable mac and cheese. For most people, they go, I don't know how to do that. So what you do is you come up with constructs, and you can do this, by the way, with a meeting, for example. You just take the different parts of a meeting and say, okay, what can I do differently with this element? So with pasta, you could have penne pasta, you could have gemelli pasta, you could have farfalle pasta, you could have rigatoni pasta. There are all kinds of ditalini pasta, cavatappi pasta. You can just keep adding. Cheese, you don't have to have orange dust. That's good news, okay? You could have gorgonzola cheese, you could have mozzarella cheese, you could have Parmigiano Reggiano, you could have Pecorino Romano cheese. There are all kinds of cheeses. I'm Italian, so I like all of those options. But you could even have, I know this is hard, you could have a French cheese. But you can add all kinds of cheeses, and it would still be mac and cheese, all right? Now, when it comes to liquid, you don't have to use milk. You could use half and half, you could use whole cream, you could use chicken stock, or you could actually use wine. Some of you just decide you're going to have mac and cheese tonight. Now, when it comes to other elements, right, you can keep playing with other elements. You could add sausage, you could add mushrooms, you could add cilantro, you could end up adding garlic. There are all kinds of things you could add. And by the way, you don't have to just pick one from each group. For example, I gave you those four cheeses because actually those four cheeses really work well together if you want to make a remarkable mac and cheese. And you could add, you could actually use wine, chicken stock, and half and half. You could use mushrooms and cilantro and garlic. You can play with it. But once you do something like this, all of a sudden, if someone were to say to you, can you make a more remarkable mac and cheese? You could probably do it now. Before this grid, some of you would have been stumped. And I just want you to know that you can do this. You really can do this. All you have to do is ask the question, how can I do this differently? You absolutely can do this. And by the way, for those of you who still don't believe that remarkable is remarkable, let me show you this one image. Three of the most expensive paintings, three of the top 10 paintings are Picasso's. This was the last Picasso sold, Boy with a Pipe, and it was sold 2 years ago for $104 million. Remarkable is marketable. All right? So, the first step, you want to ask questions like who, like
Picasso.
There we go. Let's work on this a little bit harder. Okay. Now you want to ask questions like Picasso. There we go. Now you know we got the audience participation part going. All right. Number two. Secondly, you want to do research like Da Vinci. Do research like Da Vinci. Now the reason why you want to do research is because what research does is it helps us to cause us to think thoughts we wouldn't normally have thought on our own. And that's important. For example, let's say you grew up in the Southwest and you had always grown up eating Southwest chili. My guess is if I came to you and said, hey, would you create a more remarkable chili, you would probably never think about adding chocolate and cinnamon and spaghetti to your chili. I saw some of you already moving because you know where I'm going. Because if you didn't do research and you didn't add those elements to your chili, you would have missed out on one of the truly great American chilies, which is what? Cincinnati chili. Absolutely. And that's why research is so important. And the first step, what you want to do is you want to figure out all the ideas that I have or the team and I have, and you put those down together. The second step, what you want to do is you want to get ideas outside of your own self from other people, people who would think things differently. Now, I chose Da Vinci here because he perfectly represents this. And the reason why Da Vinci was such a great researcher is because he basically distrusted his first way of seeing things. You can see this very clearly in his journals if you ever want to look at them sometime. Because you'll see that he doesn't usually draw something from one angle. He'll often draw it from three or four at different angles. because he wanted to make sure he wasn't just imagining he saw this. He wanted to make sure he really saw it. He distrusted himself. So one of my favorite quotes from Da Vinci goes like this: "The greatest deception men suffer is from their own opinions." Now think about this. When you and I come up with a thought, our natural thought is, that must be right. Why? Because we thought of it, right? You know, if we thought of it, we're brilliant. We know it's right. And so therefore, we don't do research. But if you want to be remarkable, you got to do research. Now, having said that, I know I've got another problem. And the problem is many of you are sitting there going, I hate research. Right? Because I know. For most people, when they think of research, they think of school, and they think, I don't want to go to school anymore. Man, I was okay with that first step being different, but now research, yuck. But you know what? The reality is that every one of you does research. Everyone does research all the time. Let me prove it to you. How many of you have ever asked a friend, what cell plan are you on, how many minutes do you get, and how much do you pay? You know what that's called? Research. How many of you ever opened up the Sunday paper and have gone through the supplements? You know what that's called? Research. How many of you ever gone onto Google and Googled anything? That's called research. How many of you ever gone to another retail bank to observe what they're doing? That's called research. Everybody does research. So what I say is, if everyone does research, it's better to be intentional about it. Be intentional about your research. Now, what drives great research? What drives research is great questions. And let me give you an illustration between a good question and a great question. Here's a good question, because I know you're doing client first. A good question is, what are some of the creative ideas that our competitors are attempting to use in order to be more customer-centric? That is a good question. The reason it's a good question and not a bad question is because a lot of other banks, for example, would never ask, what are other people doing? Right? They would just keep doing what they've always done. Now, so a good question would be to find out what are other people attempting to do. So, for example, you might notice that some of you might be familiar with Commerce Bank has extended hours. So from 7 or 7:30 in the morning until 8 or 9 at night, you can access the bank, and you can do it 7 days a week. Okay, they're the first people to do that, and so they own that part of the market. Now, you can look at that. You can say, hey, somebody's doing something. One bank, most banks haven't followed that. If Citigroup comes along and they say, hey, you know what, that's an idea, maybe we should extend the hours, and you decide to do that, I'm not saying you have to, but you did that, that would not be a bad thing. It would still be somewhat of a differentiator because other people aren't doing it. You have extended hours, customers probably like it because just like you, they can't get out during the day. Not a bad thing. It would help, but you can only follow when you ask this question. You can't innovate. You can only follow. A better question is to ask, what are some of the creative ideas that people outside our industry are attempting to use in order to be more customer-centric? That's the better question. Because if you want to be an innovator, you want to be the first one to do something. So you take ideas outside, and you might find that John Roberts' hair salon and spa in Cleveland, Ohio, may in fact give you some of the best customer-centric ideas for banking than if you look at Commerce Bank. Does that make sense? And so that's the reason why when you're doing research, you want to not only ask good questions, you want to learn to ask better questions so that you're thinking outside the box, and that will allow you to be great innovators. So, can you do research? Absolutely. You can do this and just ask good questions. So, step one, you want to make sure that you ask questions like who? Like Picasso. Then second step, you want to do research like Da Vinci. See, I told you can do this. Number three, you want to generate options like Edison. You want to generate options like Edison. In other words, once you and I get our ideas out, we do our research. The third step is you want to generate options. And options is plural there for a purpose. In fact, Linus Pauling, the Nobel laureate of last century, said it this way. He says, the best way to get a good idea is to get lots of ideas. Now, having said that, I realize there's a problem. And here's the problem. When people try to create, here's what they run into. As soon as they come up with a few good ideas, they run with them as if relieved. You know what I'm talking about, right? You come up, I got to come up with a creative idea. I got one, two, three. Whew, that's enough. Ready? Move on. Because for most of us, it's just like, oh, this is work, and I don't want to do work. And so they stop. Here's the problem. Ideas number one, two, and three are rarely remarkable. Now, why are the first couple ideas rarely remarkable? Because they're the normal way we think. They're ordinary ideas. Rarely are they remarkable. They're the top of the head ideas. The most remarkable ideas are usually numbers 17 or 37 or 52. But 1, 2, and 3 are rarely remarkable. And that's why most people and most companies don't create remarkability, because they stop with the first couple ideas. But if you and I want to be remarkable, we've got to generate lots and lots of ideas. Now, I picked here, Edison. And the reason why I picked Edison along with this is because some of you are familiar with a famous story related to Edison. I hope many of you have heard the story. If you haven't, it basically goes like this. Edison was trying to figure out a filament for the incandescent light bulb. Now, if you believe that he created the light bulb, you're wrong. He didn't create the light bulb. He was just trying to figure out a way to make money off light bulbs and create an inexpensive filament that would last for a long period of time. It was an economically driven decision. It wasn't that he himself created, he had a whole team of people called Edison. And so when they were working on it, they tried hundreds, if not thousands, of different elements to try to come up with the right element. They had not succeeded. A reporter came up to Edison and said, "Well, how does it feel to have failed?" And this is the response that he gave. It's a classic response, and hopefully you'll never forget it. It goes like this. He says, "I haven't failed. I now know 10,000 things that don't work." Okay? Now, if you can remember that line, 10,000 things that don't work, whether they ever try 10,000 or not, it's irrelevant. What you want to remember is that you got to come up with lots of ideas. That's why I want Edison to be tied to it. You don't want to come up with one or two or three ideas. You want to come up with as many ideas as you possibly can. Now, for many of us, we get stuck in that, so we need some kind of construct to help us. And so let me give you two ideas here. One, you can generate a set number of options. You can say, I've got to come up with 10 or 20 or 30 options, or you can set aside a period of time. You can say as a team, we're going to come spend the next 30 or 60 minutes, and we're going to come up with as many ideas as we can. Because what you want to do is force yourself to get past being content with just a few ideas. And you may look at those and think, those are two very simple ideas. Who cares? I'm telling you, innovative companies use them all the time. In fact, Fast Company had a picture about innovative companies a couple months ago, and I saw in the back, there's a picture at Google, a rather innovative company. Marissa Mayer was leading a brainstorming session, and right behind her, you could see they had a countdown clock, because they were going to take 10 minutes to come up with as many ideas as they could, and they weren't going to evaluate them for 10 minutes. So the most innovative companies do this. So when you're with your team, okay, we've got 30 minutes, so we're going to come up with 30 ideas. We're not stopping until we get 30 ideas. And then you're going to get people to come up with the options. So you've done your ideas, you've done your research, you combine them together, generate as many options as you possibly can together. Now, when you're doing this, I want to remind you, do not look for just simple ideas that are just kind of better. Nicholas Negroponte used to be at MIT Labs. He's now working on a project to provide computers for every kid on the planet, a rather small endeavor. But Negroponte put it this way. He said, incrementalism is innovation. Worst enemy. And the reason why is because when you try to do something just a little bit better, do you think your clients recognize it? No, it's just a little bit better. It's when something's radically different that they go, whoa, that's impressive. And so when you're generating ideas, don't just look for things that are just a little bit better. You want to look for things that are dramatically different or dramatically better when you're generating options. So the third step, you want to generate options like who? Like Edison, okay? So we better review here first, okay? You want to ask questions like who? Like Picasso. Secondly, do research like Da Vinci. Thirdly, generate options like Edison. Can you do this? Absolutely. Let's go to number four. Then you want to decide like Churchill. Decide like Churchill. Because at some point, you're going to have to, out of all those options, we've got to say this is the option or these are the options we're going to choose. The problem, of course, is that most people tend to take the easy, predictable choice. I want to say refuse to do that. Refuse to take the easy, predictable choice. That's why I picked Churchill, because most of us at least know this about Churchill, that he would never take the easy way out. He'd always take the bold or the courageous, the impetuous decision, that which would have the greatest impact, but he wouldn't take the easy way out. In fact, one of my favorite lines from Churchill is, "He who dares wins." And so as a company or as a division, you need to figure out, okay, what would be the biggest, boldest, riskiest thing that we could do that would be dramatically different? And let's go for that rather than the little incremental things. And that's why you want to make big, bold decisions like Churchill. Now, you obviously have to establish a criteria based on whatever you're working on. I gave you a number of them. You can pick your own. For example, dramatically different. We've talked about return on investment. The CDS, Cirque du Soleil standard, I got from Tom Peters, and I love that. If you've ever seen Cirque du Soleil or watched them on TV or something, you just stand back and you just kind of go, wow, how did they do that? Right? The CDS standard. You and I want our clients, if we're doing client first, to walk away going, wow. If you're throwing an event to appreciate your employees, you want them to walk away and just go, wow. The CDS standard. And so you can use whatever you want. Profit, time available, resource available, personal preference. You know, I use a number of cooking illustrations because I like cooking. But, you know, I've got a family member who doesn't like coconut, and I have another family member who has fruit allergies. So if I'm going to cook a remarkable meal, I know that I probably shouldn't cook with coconut, or it's a personal preference, or with fruit, because unless I want to tick someone off or kill the other person, neither of which are good ideas. Okay. But you want to figure out, you know, what your criteria are going to be for how you're going to make your decision. Now, when you you decide, here's what I wrestle with this with clients all the time, so hang with me for a second here. This is very important because most people don't get this. At the end of the day, you and I must always remember that it is the recipient of the action who decides what is remarkable or not. We don't. Okay? And that's the hardest thing. I'll have people that work on a promotion or something, they think this is the most remarkable idea. But if their clients or their customers are not voluntarily telling other people about that experience, it is by definition not remarkable. So if you have an event and none of the employees in your team tell other people about that event, it wasn't remarkable. If they do, it was remarkable. If you go home tonight and you talk to your family or you go talk to someone else about this moment here, then it was remarkable. But if you never tell another soul about what you heard here, it wasn't remarkable. I don't get to determine it. Only you can. And if you get that, it will help you make bigger, bolder decisions like Churchill. So I just gave the answer. The fourth step, you want to decide like who? Churchill. You got it. Number four. Number five. The fifth one, you want to implement like Michelangelo. Implement like Michelangelo. At the end of the day, once you and I have made a decision, we have to make sure the action occurs. Because if we don't implement it, obviously it's not remarkable because no one can receive the action. So you got to implement. Now the problem here for most of us is this. Plans rarely fail in the boardroom or in committee. They usually fail in their implementation. Correct? I mean, when you're sitting around a table, and I've seen a number of meetings in here, every time I walk around, it's easy to come up with ideas, but ultimately remarkability comes down to the implementation. Now the reason why I picked Michelangelo here is because I think he represents this perfectly. Every year, hundreds of thousands of people take some of their hard-earned savings and they buy a plane ticket and they go to Italy so they can look at one thing. This thing right here, Sistine Chapel. Think about that. Hundreds of years later, people actually spend their money to take a look at that in first person. But you know why I love Michelangelo even better than this? It's because what he said behind it. He said, if people only knew how hard I worked to gain my mastery, it wouldn't seem so wonderful at all. That's worth writing down, putting up someplace. If people only knew how hard I worked to gain my mastery, it wouldn't seem so wonderful at all. When it's all said and done, remarkability comes down to hard work and the implementation of it so that the people who are the recipients of the action walk away, wow. Vincent Party put it this way. I was told I had to have at least one sports metaphor. The dictionary is the only place where success comes before work. Hard work is the price we must pay for success. I think anyone can accomplish anything if they're willing to pay the price. And anybody can create remarkability if they're willing to pay the price, period. Now, you know how to implement. You've been doing this for a long time. I just want to go back through the process real quickly, and I want you to be honest with yourself. How many times have you missed the step? Okay, so let's go back through it. Real simple. Implementation process always begins with a plan, right? How many times have you made a decision in a meeting and never created a plan to implement it? Okay, moment of honesty. Then how many times you made a plan and not worked the plan? How many times you made a plan, put it up on the shelf, and then 3 months later someone goes, didn't we make a plan about that? I can't remember. Where did that go? Yeah, we've all done it, okay? Now, once some people work the plan, but then they don't do the third step, which is to evaluate, are we getting the result we want, right? And so some people say, hey, this is the plan, this is what I'm supposed to do, I did everything on schedule, and then they get it done. But they never stopped and asked, is this remarkable or not? And then some people will actually evaluate, but they won't do anything to modify and make the changes necessary to get the result they want. That's how you implement. But here's the key for those of you who are managers and leaders, and that's that ultimately the end process you want to systemize. Right? So you work, you plan, you work the plan, you evaluate, you modify, and then you systemize the remarkable process. Now, your people now carry out the system. What is your job as the leader and manager? Go back to step one. As soon as you create the system, your next action is to ask the Picasso question, how are we going to do this differently? Why? Because everything in life goes from remarkable to ordinary to death. If you come up with a plan that you think is remarkable in putting customers first, it will be remarkable for a period of time, but it will be gone. So your people implement the system, you go back and reinvent version 2.0. And as soon as that's systemized, then you go and go 2.1 and 2.2, and then you get really bold and do 3.0, and you keep doing that over and over again. Because everything goes from remarkable to ordinary to death. Everything. In fact, there's a car company which... If you're a woman and you bring your car in to get your tires changed, one of the things they do when you're done is they put a rose on the front seat and they put a little CD with some music in it and they tell you what happened. Now, if you're a woman and you come in and you get your car and someone brings it out to you and you get in and there's a rose in there, you're thinking, this is pretty cool. The first time. The second time, it's expected. Third time, it's just a rose. So the people who carry it out always carry the system. Your job and mine as leaders is to always innovate and continually change the system all the time until it's systemized. Then we go back again and do it again. Can you do this? Absolutely. There's no questions. So let's review them real quickly. First step, you want to ask questions like Picasso. Then you want to do research like Da Vinci. Thirdly, you want to generate options like Edison. Fourthly, decide like Churchill. And fifthly, you want to implement like Michelangelo. So you got to get the Italian Michelangelo in there, and that works, okay? Now, a couple things here. Kim, if you could, we could get the clipboards going out. That'd be great. If you go to my website, I think Phil mentioned this, you can go in under free resources. Okay, if you click on that, you can be able to get the process. You can download this image. And you can look at it, you can use it. Next to that, you'll see what I call a process one sheet. And by the way, this is a very simple thing you can do. I met with one of my clients the other day. He said, I've got this event coming up. I need to make it more remarkable. All I did is I pulled out the sheet and said, let's just walk through it. It'll walk your team through it. You can print this out. You don't pay for it. It's free. And it'll walk you through the five steps, ask you some questions, and you can do this anytime with anything. So it's very simple to do. Also, if you want, you'll see that on the right-hand side, the Remarkability Caffeine that Phil mentioned, you can get that, and it'll hopefully give you caffeine a jolt each week to remember to be remarkable. But if you want to save yourself from doing that, what these will allow you to do is you can sign up, and I will enter your name for you, so you don't even have to do anything. That makes it even better. The second thing is you'll see there's a check mark for a 14-day follow-up course. As an educator, I know that if you leave here and you don't apply this, it's over. That's a bad thing. And so what I did is I created a 14-day course. It's free. It's by email, so you don't have to worry about it. It doesn't cost you anything. But if you check the box up there, what we'll do, and I learned from doing this with other people, it will start on Monday. Because if I start it tomorrow, you're like, hey, it's a weekend. And you'll forget that. So it'll start on Monday. And what it'll do, and this, I've learned this from working with people, okay? Print it out each day. Because eventually what's going to happen over 14 days, something's going to happen, you're going to have a busy day, you're not going to do it, and some of you are going to go, I missed a day, forget it. What I do is I say, print it out each day, take 14 each day, put it in there, write out your answers, and what it will do is it'll take one project you're working on and you'll make it more remarkable. So just sign up for the 14-day course, and I'll make sure you get it, and it'll work you through one project, and I think you'll love it. It's been great for a lot of people who've done that, all right? So that said, there's one last thing I want to do before we have to take off here. And I want to introduce you to a concept because you're leaders and managers, and I want you to get this part, okay? You want to cultivate your Make It Remarkable process accelerators. If you get the process, you're doing fine. If you believe that you're able to be creative and you get the process, you're doing great. Don't worry about this. But I want to give you this last piece, and here's the reason why. Have you ever wondered why some people seem to create more remarkable ideas and solutions than others? Well, here's the answer. If you go back to that diagram I showed you before where you have questions and research options, etc., around the edge, you'll see their beliefs, values, habits, and knowledge. And what I've learned is that there are certain beliefs and values and habits and knowledge that certain people have, that when they walk through the same process, they come up with more remarkable results. And so as leaders, what I always say is that you want to work with your people, not just to take them through the process, but to help them develop the right beliefs, values, habits, and knowledge. Now, I'm not going to go through this long list, because there's a long list. That's why I gave it to you. I just want to give you one sampling under each one of these categories so you can see how this will help accelerate the process of remarkability. So let's take one of them. An essential belief would be that design matters. Now, not everyone believes that design matters. They don't. I mean, you can look around and you'll see that not everyone believes that design matters. But remarkable people understand design does matter. Steve Jobs says design is the fundamental soul of man-made creation. Let me show you this very quickly here, right? Would you prefer an Apple iPod or a Sony MP3 player? Meaning, if you're walking down a street, would you rather have an Apple iPod or a peanut? Which would be cooler? Apple... last year had a 384% increase in profit. Sony had a losing year. Design matters. And so when you're working with your people, you're going to want to help them develop the certain kinds of belief, one of them that design matters. So excellence really does matter. That's beliefs. Now I'll take a core value. These are just samples. How about simplicity? Leonardo da Vinci said simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. In this world where we have incredible complexity, most of us want simplicity, right? So let me show you this very quickly, graphically. Which is simpler, Google or Yahoo? Right? It's clear. When you want to search, you go to Google. Now, some of you are really smart, and you're sitting there saying, hey, Bruce, that's an old picture of Yahoo. They changed their first front page, and you're exactly right. But do they get the idea? That's the new one. Right? That's why I say not everyone has these values. But if you want to create remarkable, then you have to make sure your team gets the right value. And so I gave you a list of some of the values. You can choose as you like. Now, let me give you a sample here of a critical habit. And I gave you a number of habits there, like curiosity drives learning. But here's one, a positive mental attitude. And I picked this one out because I used to do a lot of talking about positive mental attitude. 85% of success factors are related to attitude, only 15% related to technical ability. And most companies only train on technical ability, they don't train on attitude. But if you and I want to have people who create remarkable ideas, they've got to have a positive mental attitude, and we have to work to help them develop that attitude. And here's the reason why. Schuller puts it this way. He says, life is full of great opportunities brilliantly disguised as impossible obstacles. If you have someone who is by nature a negative thinker, when they come up to an obstacle, they don't think, how can I make this more remarkable? They go, forget it. Right? But when you have someone with a positive mental attitude, they see an obstacle, they think it's a great opportunity. And so as a manager and leader, you want to help your people develop the right kind of habits. Let's lastly take a look at knowledge. Knowledge base, I picked technical competency there. For example, if I was going to create a more remarkable mac and cheese, or let's say this guy here, Emeril Lagasse, was to create a more remarkable mac and cheese, who would create a more remarkable mac and cheese? You don't have to be nice to me. Come on. Emeril. No question. Why? Because he has more technical competency than I do. And so when we're working with our people, we want to make sure that we develop technical competency as deep as we can, at the same time intellectual breadth, which is the next one, because creativity is often related to linking different ideas from different places together in a new way. And so as you're working with your people, not only work on technical competency, but also intellectual breadth. You put all those things together and you can accelerate the process. Remember, as leaders, you want to work on the outside rim here on beliefs, values, habits, and knowledge, and you can accelerate the process through. But it's still the same five steps. So now we're about ready to be finished. So let's ask the question, where do we go from here? Tom Watson from IBM fame was once asked the question, how long does it take to become excellent? His answer, a minute. If you ask me, how long does it take to become remarkable? My answer would be a moment. Why? Because it only is a decision. That's all it takes, just a decision to be remarkable. So where do we go from here? Here are a couple questions in your notes. How committed are you to eradicating the ordinary from your life and work and unleashing the remarkable? One is low, 10 is high. Just circle a number. And I will cry if it's lower than an 8. Okay. Number two, and a grown man crying, a very bad thing. Just kidding. Application question number two, how strongly do you believe that you're creative and that you can do this? One low, 10 high. And hopefully you're near 10. Because you can do this, absolutely. Number three, what are the top three projects or problems you need to work on? Now, we don't have a lot of time here. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes. So just take a moment, just top of the head, something that right now is bugging you. Just write it down. What is a project that's just kind of ordinary or stuck or a problem? And don't write the name of the person sitting next to you. That is not an acceptable answer. Okay, now
30 pages for November 18th.
That's it.
That's a problem, guys. Write it down.
Okay, now I only have about 3 minutes. Okay, so what you're going to do is pick one of those, right? And if you sign up the 14-day course, okay, it'll take you through that one thing. You're going to pick one thing. You're going to start working it with some ideas. How can I do this differently? Number six, you do have to answer this question. Okay, what's one thing you can do within the next 24 hours to make something in your life or work more remarkable? You got to pick one thing. You got to write something down. Napoleon Hill says, it's not what you're going to do, but what you are doing now that counts. So everyone's got to write down one thing. Because hopefully you haven't wasted this hour. Right? What is one thing? Something in your mind, at some point you thought, you know what, I ought to work on this. And by the way, it could be at work, and it could be at home, it could be in a relationship, be anything. Just one thing you're going to do in the next 24 hours. All right? And some of you are thinking about mac and cheese with wine. Okay. And application question number seven. With whom can you share what you learned today within the next 48 to 72 hours? And this is important. You've got to put down a name and when. And here's the reason why. And some of you probably learned this. If you internalize something and then tell somebody what you learned, then you own it. But if you don't tell somebody else, you won't. So this time will really be wasted if you don't do this step. Take what you've learned, and you can do it with your team tomorrow, by the way. You can do it with a spouse, you can do it with a friend. Take what you've learned, explain what you learned, and then you will own it yourself. Okay? Because at the end of the day, if you remember, everything in life goes from remarkable to ordinary to death. Everything. Ordinary is a killer. It is not your friend. Sameness is your enemy. You want to get rid of that, eradicate it out of your life. Say, from this point forward, I want everything to be remarkable. I want my family to be remarkable. I want my relationships to be remarkable. I want my work to be remarkable. I want my service to be remarkable. And you can do this. Can you do this? Absolutely you can do this. And at the end of the day, here's what I want you to remember. Every day, somebody somewhere is doing something remarkable. Why not let that someone be you? So are you that person who's going to do the remarkable thing tonight and tomorrow? Thank you very much, and have a great night.
Always
always doing the right thing, regardless of who gets the credit. So she kind of leads the team the right way. The team is successful, really due to her initiative, but the team overall gets the credit, and that's the way she wants it.